this is a bag.
This is going to get $3 or $12.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was about a year earlier. The ticket was less than the popcorn and the Coke I got.
This one's on.
Okay.
Well, tickets have gotten expensive now, too. Like, we'll go to a movie, they're usually like $10. We've done that. Oh, do you get like the gift cards? I don't go to enough movies. Well, I figured it was like $75.
Can you get a roll of tickets? So I put this ad in that I did at rhubarb to make jam. And somebody from the BSC wrote me, he says, I have an obnoxious amount of rhubarb that I'll bring you on Friday, and I can't remember what that means.
I don't really order that online, it's just like not smoking that.
Yeah, I want to make jam, so. Let's see what I get. I got some of my Ori Santos. Dude, I have some on my plant, too, because I didn't get it today. But I did, yeah, like a gallon bag, and it was like $4.
Well, don't you mention.
It turned out the second half of the party was a movie.
All right.
Please be very mindful when you get out.
Kids movie problem?
Because the setup here, we'll have to speak direct. Video games might be able to pull the mic up close to us when we speak.
Okay. Of course. Okay. So. So I'm going to have to turn this a little bit. I apologize. Because we don't have our own.
Oh.
Of course. Good evening. Welcome to the Bellevue Planning Commission. I'm Chair Michelle Hillhorst, and we will go ahead and get started. Apologies for the late delay. We did need to have quorum to begin the meeting here. So the roll call, we have present with us myself, Vice Chair Devidas, Commissioner Carlson, Commissioner Morceau, Commissioner Walter, Commissioner Lang is excused this evening, and Commissioner Barksdale, I assume, will be arriving later, because I did hear from him he will be attending, so I believe he is on his way. All right, and Councilmember Stokes is, Mayor Stokes is not with us, but I believe will be joining us later. So we'll move on to the approval of the agenda. I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda as written.
So moved.
All right, I hear a motion to approve the agenda. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right, I hear a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any dissent say nay. All right, the agenda is approved. Thank you. All right, public comment. Do we have a sign-in sheet or any, who wants to do public comment? Anybody? Well, that was quick. All right. So I guess we just made up our time. No public comment. So all right, we'll move on. So we are right on schedule. Our study session, Low Impact Development Principles Project. And it looks like we have quite a few folks joining us. So I assume you are right here on the.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Tonight they're going to be speaking from both the podium, both at the public hearing, the regular meeting, and here from the table itself. So,
okay, so they will
we'll
also
be operating PowerPoint from there.
Okay.
It's their choice, but they could be going back and forth. They have a
clicker,
a remote clicker, yeah. And
while
they're getting set up, and I'll put their presentation on in just a moment. I'm going to repeat in case. Here. Please be very mindful if you're getting up, commissioners, because there's cords all over, and with the lower light, it may be difficult to see. So watch your step. There is plenty of food that should last us throughout the evening, And what's very important is that we talk into the mic. So when we're speaking, try to pull the mic as close as you can for the recording secretary to pick it up. And if anyone wishes to speak from the audience, please ask them to come up to the front to speak so that we can get them on the record, so it won't pick up from back there.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, are we ready? Yeah, I assume you're there until we have to watch you go somewhere else.
Okay, well, good evening, commissioners. Thanks for having us back. We're very excited to come back and work in depth through the proposals that we brought to you at the last session. And tonight our goals are is to work through the impervious proposals that we had, go through those in depth, and if we have time, we'll start into the tree retention proposals. So our goal tonight is to work in depth through those proposals. We have some new language we'd like to share with you, and then if you have some language you'd like to share with us, that would be great, and then we could bring back any revised changes. We're tentatively scheduled to come back on July 13th to do some additional work with you. And with that, I will introduce who's at the table with me tonight. At the far right is Brittany Port with the consulting firm of AHBL, and Paul Busich, the assistant engineering director with Utilities. Of course, I'm Catherine Drews, and with me is, what's your name again? No, Wayne Carlson with AHBL. So without further ado, I'll let Wayne take over, and we'll move through our brief presentation.
Great. So this is an overview of the presentation. We're going to begin by explaining why we're here, quickly go through the council direction, and then really kind of try and dive into the amendment proposals and the next steps. So while we're here this evening, here at the study sessions, to share and solicit feedback to you from the proposals to integrate low-impact development principles into the city's existing codes and enforceable standards for new and redevelopment projects. You may remember we were here a few weeks ago kind of presenting an overview of the process we had here to date. The council direction for this project, City Council issued a project interest statement that says the City of Bellevue supports the objective of making low-impact, maintaining the region's quality of life, including that of making low-impact development the preferred and commonly used approach to site development. And that clause, the preferred and commonly used approach to site development, is language that was not accidental. It was taken right out of the permit as kind of one of the kind of required language. The council also approved various principles to guide our work in the city's approach for this project. First, that any of the proposals be Bellevue appropriate, and so what that means is that different areas within the city that have been planned differently might the standards would be different, just like as you'd see in the various plans as well as zoning chapters, etc. That any of the solutions recognize and seek to balance competing needs, and that would be needs for protecting the watershed, development rights, homeowners interest, business, etc. Build on existing information and programs, engage stakeholders, and certainly to maintain the City of Bellevue's compliance record with its NPDES stormwater permit.
I'm going to just add an interesting point on the last bullet. We did just receive a letter from Puget Sound Keepers last week asking how our progress was going on this project, and because they were a big proponent of this project, of this portion of the in the permit. And so I was happy to report to them that we're on track and that we've had we've made great progress and that we are going to meet the deadline. So we were able to send that letter out today.
From to who?
Puget Sound Keepers. They're an environmental group and they're very active in the clean water and stormwater world.
Yeah, they were one of the appellants for the 2007 appeal to the Growth Management Hearings Board that made this become a requirement in this reissued 2012-2013 permit.
But they're not the official body we're holding right?
No,
the government agency.
Department of Ecology.
Yeah, okay. They're just an interest group? Would that be fair to say?
They're an environmental, that's correct. They're an environmental interest group. But they're very vested.
Okay.
Yeah, very interested.
So as we indicated, the permit goals, and these are for the LA principles. You may remember at the last Planning Commission meeting, we kind of described that the integrating LID into the codes and standards, it involves both the LID BMPs, which would be bioretention, permeable paving, et cetera, as well as the LID principles. And that what this particular project involves is the principles. The BMPs are being done through an update to the city stormwater management manual. But the principles, the goals related to the principles are to minimize native vegetation loss, minimize impervious surface coverage, and try to minimize stormwater runoff. And so over the course of last year, we evaluated opportunities within the city's land use and transportation codes for opportunities to work towards those goals. And these are the areas of focus that we found and identified, and the areas that our proposed amendments address. So within the land use code, those include evaluating the use of LID early in the process, reducing impervious surface coverage, preserving and enhancing tree canopy, and looking for opportunities to make the city's existing clustering provisions, which it has, and maybe more attractive to applicants. So what we want to do, it was just a real quick introduction, but we wanted to really kind of dive into what are the proposals that you have before you, and to be able to provide quite a bit of detail. So the first area within the land use code that we dealt with was trying to minimize impervious surface coverage or to try and reduce impervious surfaces in some way. So these are some of the highlights, and then we'll kind of go through quite a bit in terms of details. But one of the things that we wanted to first note is that the proposed amendments that you have before you don't involve any changes in the amount of building coverage. So currently, the city of Bellevue has a standard for the coverage in structures, and another standard called impervious surface limit for structures and paving, sidewalks, etc. And so, obviously, the building coverage that's allowed is a subset of that overall impervious surface standard. And so, none of the proposals before you would in any way change the footprint of structures that is allowed to occur within the city. So, none of those changes.
Sorry, thank you. I would just clarify, so the covered, so your house, your garage, right? But if you want to add something outside of that existing structure, that's when this now comes into play or changes, correct?
Right. Yeah, so what we're talking about this today, that's a great question, are things like driveways, patios, walkways, sport courts, parking lots, you know, all of basically the various paving types. And so we're really kind of getting at the material surfacing for those kind of ancillary or accessory types of things, but yeah, not the structure.
Okay, so the structure footprint stays the same. So that's what you're saying, stays the same,
correct?
Right? Because some of my questions is what's now, what's the gap, what we're trying to fill. But what we need to really have the discussion on is if somebody wants to add to their property a shed, right, to their property that would fall under this new, or a sport court, like you mentioned.
A shed would be a structure. A sport court would be the paving that we're talking about.
Okay. So, So how's that different? The bottom of a shed, say that's concrete, how's that different than a sport court? It's still the surface? How's that a different impervious surface?
Well, you know, they're both, you're correct, they're both impervious surfaces, but the code, and many codes distinguish between structures because they're looking at things like kind of the massing on a site, and so the reason there's, you know, often controls that maybe differ between the structural coverage and the other impervious surface deals with the massing and just the amount of kind of floor area that you have on a site. You know, and setbacks and things of that nature.
Right. I guess I just look at if I'm pouring concrete for a new shed or I'm pouring concrete for a new sport court, why did the shed be allowed but the sport court not in this new proposal, I guess?
I think it'll be, we have some examples, and
okay.
I think it'll be clearer when we start walking through the code, and then we can talk about that.
Okay, because
that'll be easier for you.
Because that's some of the questions is, you know,
sure.
Everybody's pouring concrete. But what I saw the difference is you talked about the roof, if you will, so a house or a garage, and I wasn't seeing the difference of what's under that house or that garage or anything like that, right? Okay. The whole point, what I understand, is you're trying to minimize any concrete getting poured, is what I'm inferring from this.
Sure.
If that makes sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, other kind of highlights before we kind of dive into the details is that a new standard is proposed for hard surface coverage that will supplement the existing impervious surface standard, and we'll kind of run through what that means. The impervious surface standards are proposed to be aligned for consistency with the development that's occurred within each zone. And what we mean by that is the numbers that the numeric numbers that you find within your packet have been established through kind of both GIS as well as permit research from the city's database of developments that have occurred either historically or over the last 10 years. And then finally, the proposal will allow the same coverage using permeable surfaces that have been planned under the city's comprehensive plan and neighborhood plans. And so we'll get into that in quite a bit more detail when we really step through the footnotes. So before I kind of begin, let me first explain what a hard surface is. A hard surface is really an umbrella term that includes both structure, traditional impervious surfaces, including structures, impervious pavement, you know, asphalt, concrete, etc., as well as permeable paving and vegetated roofs. So that is the official kind of definition that is in the ecology stormwater management manual and also in the permit. So this is a little kind of snippet just to show you how these numbers work. But again, at the very first row, this is a snapshot out of a portion of the residential zone, of some residential zones, and then we'll kind of show you also on commercial. But maximum lot coverage by structures percent. And that's what I was telling you is, you know, kind of remaining unchanged. So in the R1 zone, for instance, you can cover up to 35% of the lot area with rooftops, whether it's a home, garage, a shed, that type of thing. So it's not a, you know, kind of an unlimited, but that's the percentage of a site that can be covered today. And there's no proposed change of that by structures. Currently, there's a standard for maximum impervious surfaces, and the numbers that you see after the word percent, you know, 35, 37, 39, 49, those are a variety of footnotes. These bulk and dimensional tables that the city has, you know, there's probably just as much detail in all the footnotes as there are actually in the tables. We'll kind of step you through that. But currently, the maximum amount of impervious surface that's allowed is, for instance, in that R1 zone, is 50%. We are proposing to align that with the development patterns that we've seen, and actually make it actually a fair amount higher than the development patterns that we've seen, to 40%. Our GIS research and also permit research, I believe that, and there's a big spreadsheet in your packages, your packets, but I believe that was 22-23% is what is realized on the ground, say, for instance, within the R1 zone. So property owners are coming nowhere near that 50%. And so I felt there was an opportunity to kind of align that number a little closer to what is currently occurring on the ground. And then what we did was, yes.
So we talked with in downtown livability about down zones. It seems like when you take away something from a property owner, it's a down zone. Would that be the case? I'm thinking like steps ahead, like what are the economics of this? A house that only covers 40%, what impervious area do they have? I know there's some R1, I believe there are one near where I am, and they've got a tennis court and they've got other things that wouldn't be considered structure. But if we're going to take away, we're going to say you can only build 40%, and, oh, your tennis court isn't going to qualify anymore. I'm thinking you might be taking more away from property owners than these numbers would indicate.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Now, when I indicated that we did a survey using the GIS and also the previous kind of permit information, that included also other paving. It wasn't just a look at the rooftops. So that 40% certainly...
like the tennis court?
Yes.
Yeah, includes that as well. Yeah. However, your point is very well taken, and that's why that last row, in terms of maximum hard surface, what we did was we indicated that if you still do want to pave up to 50%, which is currently with the impervious surface, the balance, we're encouraging it or we're stating that it needs to be a permeable surface. So. And so we have some footnotes regarding that I'd like to further explain. So what we're doing is we're saying you can still get to that 50%, but where it is feasible, you're to use permeable surfaces. So permeable concrete or asphalt or pavers, things like that. Obviously, you wouldn't use that for maybe a tennis court, but you might for, say, a walkway or a driveway or things like that.
So where do you get the gain? You got 50% coverage to 50% coverage. You've got a smaller building. And don't get me wrong, the mega houses is something I've kind of been challenged with. I'm just looking at the math. Like, yeah, we're going from 50 to 50.
You get the gain because that other 10% is permeable. You know, to go from... So your limit is still... Your limit would be 40% pervious. The other 10%... if it's feasible, would be permeable. So you're getting 10%. That 10% that would have maybe heretofore been impervious surface is now a permeable surface. So that's where you're getting the gain.
It's essentially...
No, I've got it.
Yeah, we're just,
I've got
we're,
it.
Yeah, we're substituting a porous material.
This whole thing is basically... an inducement program to get people to use permeable surfaces in place of impervious surfaces wherever possible. And that's the direction they want to go in.
Right. It's just, it helps me to see all sides of something as I'm looking through it. Because what's happening then to the people who own the property is, I would say, fairly significant.
Well, if anything, the gain is to your advantage because they're already reducing the maximum impervious surface to 40% where it used to be 50. So if they're going with impervious surface, they only have, if this moves forward, they only have to provide 40%, whereas before they had to provide 50%.
Is that the direction the math is going?
Well, have to surface. Provide or get taken
no,
away?
No, it's an opportunity.
It's a reduction.
You can build up to, that says how much you can use. You can use up to 50%.
Right.
But now we're rolling, we're
they're reducing the amount you can go up to.
Right.
So that's
right.
Taking away from the homeowner.
Right.
And that's the point somebody was making.
Yeah.
So, Vice Chair.
So there was a comment about the cost of pervious surfacing being comparable to the traditional surfacing methods. Could you maybe give some more detail on that?
Paul?
I guess by election that would be me. So there have been significant strides in the last 15 years on bringing the cost down of pervious asphalt and pervious concrete. When it was first being proposed in this region, by the way, it's been used in other parts of the country for many years. Our batch plants, concrete plants, asphalt plants, weren't set up to run that type of material. Now that it's become more commonplace, we're finding that the costs, while maybe a little incrementally more expensive, they are more than offset by the lack of stormwater controls that have to now be built and maintained. For a single-family residential, it's going to cost perhaps a little bit more for their driveway than it would otherwise. However, from a net benefit is that there's less water running off the site, therefore there's less cost. If they're in a neighborhood, if it's a new neighborhood, for example, that's being built, the developer will reduce the cost for all their stormwater infrastructure and the size of the stormwater facilities that they have to make, which theoretically should help reduce the cost to the property owners when they're buying lots and the houses that are going on it.
And they may actually net, a developer may actually net extra lot, an extra lot or a little bit larger lots because they're not using, dedicating a lot to a stormwater track for a vault, for example, if they can use infiltration instead.
The more that this is applied on a development basis instead of individual lots, the greater the cost savings there is in net for the entire cost for building that development. Okay? That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And we did provide some cost information in the EPA fact sheets that we included in your packet. And there also is on the LID Principles Project website, we posted a new document called Connecting the Flow. There's a new document on there about a study about municipal changes using LID and the benefits to the communities, including the costs. Cost examples or studies there from Portland, Oregon, and of actual projects demonstrating the cost differences. And it's a very level study, showing you know it may be a little bit more like Paul